Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Next Tuesday, the D.C. Council is scheduled to vote on the East End Health Equity Act. The bill would bring a new hospital to wards 7 and 8 east of the Anacostia River here in the District of Columbia. But this proposal has been interlaced with politics and questions about why Howard University's hospital has not been included in the plan. Until last Wednesday, George Washington University Hospital and Universal Health Services were the entities that would manage the new hospital scheduled to open in 2023. GW pulled out of negotiations after the council passed an amendment including Howard University Hospital in the bill. Well, tonight we update you on where we are. My guest is Dr. Hugh Mighty, Dean of the Howard University School of Medicine. Before we hear from him, we'll hear from Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about Ward 8 Council Member Trayon White reportedly changing his mind about his amendment, and Ward 7 Council Member Vincent Gray calling the amendments poison pills that could kill the deal.
The amendment that Councilmember White put forward passed 11-0, including a vote by Councilmember Gray, curiously. So the poison pill remark is unfortunate at best, is what I would say. I know Councilmember Gray, obviously not as well as everyone else, but we've had him here at Howard. He put on some great symposia for our students after he stepped down as mayor. And, you know, I think I got a chance to see what was in his heart and to know how he feels about young people and their education and training. So I'm very confident when I say that he is not against seeing Howard students and residents train. And that can be done while care is given to Ward 7 and 8 residents in the best way possible. I don't think those two things are incompatible. And like I said, I think the poison pill comment was unfortunate at best. But, you have to look at the body of someone's work and life, and I'm not a soundbite kind of guy, and I'm not going to tie Councilmember Gray to that. I think I'll tie his body of work.
That is Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick, of course. Dr. Mighty, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Sure. Talk to me about your thoughts about what Dr. Frederick just said and the incidents over the past week or so with George Washington University pulling out of negotiations for this.
So I'll echo what President Frederick has said in that our biggest interest in the building of that hospital east of the river is that Howard has an opportunity to have its students and its residents and faculty train there, get educated there. And along the way, we're also, by virtue of being there, we're going to be able to provide care to the patients. Now, we have served those patients for longer than you and I have been around, 150 years Howard's been here. So we've served the underserved population, we've served these communities of D.C. for a long time, and we've educated for that long. So I can't speak to Universal's plan and why they necessarily pulled out. I applaud the council members for assisting Howard by putting in that bill an amendment that would allow Howard access to train their students and residents there.
But what has happened, as I just mentioned, Ward 8 council member Trayon White has reportedly had a change of heart in reference to his amendment, and Ward 7 council member Vincent Gray, the former mayor, has called those initial amendments poison pills, which could kill the deal. Are you concerned that come next Tuesday that Vincent Gray may very well be correct?
Well, I'm certainly always going to be concerned about the opportunities for our students. And there's no vote final until it's final. So we are concerned. We continue to work and appeal to the council members. We continue to update our alumni and our students as to the fact that although that bill and the amendments went through, the vote's not final. And nothing is done until it's done in politics and world. So I am concerned. I'm very concerned because if we are not able to access that hospital, it will be crippling to Howard University in the long run and its ability to teach, train its students.
Explain that for people who don't understand why something that is happening east of the river in Ward 7 and 8 could impact the Howard University School of Medicine and the hospital, which is here in Northwest.
Okay, sure. So the way we are set up, Howard University trains 265 residents, fellows, and 475 medical students. You're required to have a hospital to train in, and Howard University Hospital has been that hospital for a very long time. We, by serving the community in Ward 7 and 8, because they don't really have a hospital there, about one-third of all our patients are coming from Ward 7 and 8. When a new hospital is built, those patients are going to go to the new hospital, which we fully expect, and we would want them to go to a hospital close to them. So we support the hospital. However, that shift in volume then becomes critical because we need that volume in order to adequately train our students and our residents. So the impact ultimately is that those patients will go away. Howard won't be able to maintain their volumes unless they can get access to that hospital. And secondarily, when your volumes move, so does your revenue, so the hospital itself will have to shrink, which ultimately could lead to the closure of the hospital.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the East End Health Equity Plan for East of the River, a new hospital scheduled for 2023. In Wards 7 and 8, and Howard University's fight to be part of that plan. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. We have a truncated program tonight, so we're ending at 7:30. I have with me Dr. Hugh Mighty, Dean of the Howard University School of Medicine. Also, when I spoke to Dr. Frederick today, I asked him specifically about the process that excluded Howard University and why he believes that that actually happened. And this is what he shared with me.
But what I do know is that if you pick UHS as the operator, it's also a difficult situation. They own 80% of George Washington University Hospital, and they have an agreement, as explained to me by the CEO, in which GW has the right of first refusal when they do things. So with that in mind, I could see them saying, listen, this is what we do, this is who we work with, and we happen to work with GW, versus something of malintent to exclude Howard. Having said that, that's more reason why, in a legislative process, if you do think it's important to preserve Howard's participation, you have to include that, because they do have an agreement with GW that they have to honor, and I appreciate that, and I think so. You want to at least get them in the mindset that yes, we understand that you do have an agreement with GW where they have a right of first refusal, but especially given the city using public funds and tax dollars to build a hospital, the city does have an interest. I hope in preserving Howard University. Academic mission, and therefore it would be helpful to include Howard as an academic affiliate in the final agreement. And I think that works. So I also would not speculate about anyone having malintent, short-sightedness maybe, but I wouldn't necessarily go as far as saying that I've seen or heard of anything or felt that there is malintent.
Dr. Mighty, who or what is UHS for those who are not familiar with this?
So Universal Health Services is a for-profit hospital manager. They manage hospitals. They manage multiple hospitals across the country. They are based in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. And they operate the George Washington University Hospital. It's not George Washington, the universities. They operate a hospital with the name George Washington Hospital on it.
Mm-hmm. And so they are the managing entity that if this hospital were to go forward as originally planned, this would be the managing entity east of the river for this new facility, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Do you have an idea what Howard's position would be if the university and the hospitals, more specifically in the School of Medicine, for that matter, had a partnership? What would be the role?
So any partnership that we have, we've been on record, and since I've been here since 2015, and since 2015, we've always taken the position that Howard itself does not want to be in the business of running a hospital. We want to staff it. We want to train. We want to teach. We want to do our core mission. So any partner that's on that side of the river for the new hospital, you know, we expect that we would have access to train, to treat the patients, and to deliver the specialties. We have, importantly, a full array of specialists. Okay, so we can treat basically any medical condition with the exception of transplants. So we would deliver care from Howard's perspective to those citizens in that hospital, which is a somewhat slightly different model than we've heard from the CEO of Universal, which is they would deliver basically low-level care, but all the higher-end things would still be moved to their hospital at GW Hospital in Foggy Bottom. It's a different model that we've taken a different approach to how we deliver that care.
What's wrong with just having medical students train, whether they're from Howard or anywhere else?
Nothing at all. I mean, in a nation that has a shortage of physicians, period, of any kind, we should want to make sure that we can train more physicians and not try to jeopardize programs that shut them down. Specifically to Howard, Howard is the single largest producer of African-American physicians in the country. If you look at the top 25 institutions that produce black doctors, going from 1980 to 2014, Howard has produced over 2,000. Meharry in Tennessee has produced just slightly less than that. After that, there's no hospital that's produced more than 350. And if you go down the list of the top 25, the ones in our regions are not on that list. So we have to recognize, one, there's nothing wrong with training side by side. We should encourage that. It's diversity. It helps exchange ideas. But it's also to note that the importance of Howard, not just to the District of Columbia, but to the nation, is huge.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lee, calling from Southeast D.C. Lee, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Okay, I live in Anacostia, and I'm actually a Howard alumni. I'm a little confused. I'm trying to understand. So is it that GW is, who exactly is building the hospital, and who, and how exactly is it getting funded? Who's actually going to own it? I'm not fully understanding exactly what's happening.
That's an excellent question, Dr. Mighty.
So it is an excellent question. So the hospital, as proposed, will be built with $300 million of public funds. It's D.C. tax funds. That's how the hospital will be built.
Then the taxpayers are the ones that are paying for it.
That's correct. Your taxpayer money. Dr. Mighty, please continue.
So technically, it's a public hospital. It would be operated by a different entity, and in this case, the proposed entity is Universal. So that's who would be operating the hospital. Now, there's a difference between operating the hospital, sort of like being the engineer who's driving a train and riding on the train. So the people within the hospital supplying services would be the physicians. And in our case, hopefully, it'd be Howard physicians and medical students and residents. And if it's alongside George Washington students and residents, that would be perfectly fine. But the operator would be Universal. The builder of that hospital would be the district government. So that's how it's basically structured at the moment.
Lee, thank you so much for giving us a call. We appreciate it. I only have a few minutes left. In the worst case scenario, if this goes forward, if this hospital is built without Howard University, what is the long term impact for the School of Medicine and for Howard University Hospital.
So currently, if there are no changes in how it is structured, the worst case scenario for long-term impact is the hospital would shrink. We wouldn't have enough volumes to accommodate the training of the physicians that we have today. And so it threatens the School of Medicine, which itself could then go out of business, and then the hospital would basically rapidly fall.
Mm-hmm. If this hospital is not built, if this plan just dies on the vine next week and there is no other option, what do you suggest that portends for Ward 7 and 8 when it comes to health care in that community?
So there are two things. First, there needs to be a hospital there, and I am not a fatalist, to be quite honest. If someone would say, is there going to be an operator, I would say if we structure this appropriately, there will be an operator for a hospital there. So I'm not a fatalist that says if this dies, there's absolutely no other option. From that perspective, the folks deserve that there. I think we'll find an operator. So I'm not going to tell you that. I would be optimistic that we can find an operator.
Real quick, last phone call. Brenda calling from Frederick, Maryland. Brenda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I guess I'm still confused as with the new hospital. How in the world could you leave out Howard University Hospital?
That is another excellent question. Your thoughts about that, Dr. Mighty?
Well, excuse me. I don't have an answer to that, to be quite honest. It is a good question, but one that I think will be better posed to the district and the decision makers.
Mm. And as you may or may not have heard, Brenda, Dr. Frederick did say he does not believe there was any malintent. But certainly, as we move forward between now and the vote on December 18th before the D.C. Council, I'm quite sure that that remains a question without a clear answer, at least for now. But Dr. Humadi, thank you for coming in. I know you're just a tad bit under the weather, but I really appreciate you coming in and talking with us about this very, very important issue, and we will continue to follow it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Brenda, also, thank you so much for your phone call. As I said earlier, we do have a truncated program tonight, but we will continue to follow this story. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, December 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. Good night.